Hello and welcome to the Fellowship Phase, an Adventures in Middle-earth podcast. I'm Josh and that's Callum. We're going to give you inside information on how to find your own path through Tolkien's world.
Dale lies directly before the gates of Erebor and the headwaters of the Running River, within a wide valley encircled by the great southern and southeastern spurs of the Lonely Mountain. The mountainsides, long barren due to the dragon's influence, grow green again, though they lack the great trees they once bore. Due to the mountain's ridges, Dale lies often in shadow. The sun, rising over the southeastern spur, doesn't directly touch Dale till mid-morning, when the first rays reach the front gate of the royal palace.
Hello, Callum and James.
Hello, Josh and Callum.
Hello, Josh, which is a combination of James and Josh.
Is it?
Maybe Josh?
Again, no.
I think that works.
Joms?
Is this just how we start up my guest appearances now?
Apparently so. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the new episode of Adventures in Middle... No, that's the name of the book. We need to cut
Fellowship
that out.
Phase.
That's the name of the show.
It's been a while.
It has been a while. But we are here to talk about something that's very close to James's heart. I nearly called you a different name there. Very close to James's heart. What are we talking about today, James?
We are talking about Dale.
I literally nearly called you Dale.
I couldn't. Well, I thought you nearly called me Torvald, but yeah, Dale would be funnier. Yes, I guess that leads us into our first topic of discussion, which is
what is a Dale?
The name Dale.
Oh right. Well, as we know with Tolkien, a linguist, names have great meaning. We know that. There's whole tomes written about where names came from, their roots, the different languages. So there must be something deep to be said about the city of Dale.
Indeed. And yeah, I've been doing some research into this. And you know, unlike the great mystery why Lake Town is called Lake Town, I think it's why Dale is called Dale is fairly straightforward. It was named after a guy called Dale. Who was
not great... translated from some ancient Elvish, just a guy.
Well, who was no doubt a great hero of the Northmen. I believe that Tolkien was drawing from ancient Germanic sources here, where he was inspired by a tale of two compatriots, defenders of the land. In Old English, the names would be Forchippin and Dal. But of course, we know them by their modern English cognates, Chippendale.
I'm never sure how serious he's being. This is deadly serious. This is, you've heard it here first, unwritten, unpublished. Unwritten.
unpublished.
That was a Freudian slip, wasn't it?
It's accurate. I think it's accurate.
What's even funnier is that in our game, there was a character from Dale at a festival that took place in Lake Town, representing Dale. And I usually prep a lot and never improvise anything. And on this occasion, I had forgotten to prep, I had prepped an in-depth Tolkien-inspired name for this character, but someone stole it. So I ended up calling this character Dale of Dale.
Not initially realizing that was... the name of the...
Yeah, so Dale of Dale, named after, which is named after someone else called Dale. It's a circular, it's a circle of Dale.
Now, I should say, Tolkien, being a philologist, a scholar of language, was probably aware of these, linguistic origin of these two heroic figures' names. And it turns out the name Dale actually comes from, you know, the word for a valley with a stream in it. I'm sure he's playing like a clever linguistic joke there by it's named after a guy called Dale, but that guy's name happens to describe the exact topography of the city of Dale.
Well, maybe that's why Dale founded the city there, because he finally found a city that location that matched his name.
There we go. Yes.
So we'll never know. It's a chicken and the egg, isn't it? We never know if it was
right.
The name for that topography of terrain was named after this guy because he's founded a town there named after himself.
Perfectly summed up, Callum.
We'll never know.
We'll never know, but we do know some things about the city of Dale. Not a great deal from Tolkien's lore, so perhaps we kick off with what we know from Tolkien. We could talk a bit more about what's available in the various role-playing books and then how we've used Dale in our own campaign, because it's been something of a hub for us and it's quite a good foil to some of the other settlements. So what is written by Tolkien? What do we know about Dale from Tolkien?
"There lies all that is left of Dale," said Balin. "The mountain sides were green with woods, and all the sheltered valley rich and pleasant in the days when the bells rang in that town."
Well, there's the bit that Callum read out, which is quite frankly most of it. Yeah, when
it was a short intro, but
that was a substantial amount. There is, however, some additional things that I think are worth talking about in The Hobbit. And primarily, I think, as the other thing that's worth talking about that is in The Hobbit is Bard. Bard is very important for Dale. And I think the legend of Bard and how he becomes king is quite significant, obviously. Not just in terms of, well, there's three things, right? There are three elements that go into Bard becoming king of Dale. First, he is descended from the old lords of Dale. But it's interesting that the old lords of Dale were not kings. They were just lords. So it's not like he's reclaiming an ancient kingship. He is beginning a line of kings.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. Secondly, obviously, he kills the dragon.
Yes.
Fairly straightforward. Anyone can do it if you just have a black arrow and immense skill. But thirdly, and this is the bit that I think is the most interesting, is that it's also popular acclaim. The people of Lake Town, as then were, decide that they want him to be king. That is the main way that he becomes king, is that when they realize he survived, when he hasn't died in the fight against Smaug, they're like, well, that guy should obviously be in charge. And then there was that negotiation between him and the old master of Lake Town, where Master Lake says, well, I'm still the master of Lake Town, even though it doesn't exist anymore. And you can go off back to Dale if you want to be king of Dale. And I nearly called him Dale. Bard.
Like, there's a lot going around.
Sure, that's fine. I'm happy to be, you know, now the dragon's dead, that we can just have Dale again. So let's do that. And I think it's a different story of becoming king than Aragorn, is, I guess, the point that I want to make.
Mm.
Aragorn is, you know, the kingship renewed. He is the throne restored.
Yes.
And he is descended from the kings of Numenor. He's descended from Erendil. You know, he is a Mary Sue. He is a very special boy. And Bard, yes, he has noble lineage, but he's not the kind of epic level hero that Aragorn is. He's a bit more human.
I think what's interesting is so much of Tolkien and fantasy works generally, the idea of the kind of creation myth and the history is very distant, and often the bit that we as the readers or the audience engage with, there are already reams of history that go beforehand. It's certainly true with what we look at with Gondor, with Aragorn. You know, there's so much of a tale leading up to the point we actually meet him. Whereas with King Bard, I nearly called him King Dale, King Bard is effectively the creation myth of Dale, but in contemporary terms. Like, we see the heroic story being created. He was the person who defeated the dragon and then restored the city. But we see that in contemporary times rather than all the other ones that we see throughout Tolkien's work, which are very much allusions to the past. So it's a bit different. And I think it means the impression I get then is of Dale as quite a young place, even though it's not. I know it's a historical city, but it feels like a young, flourishing place of opportunity, which I think lends itself to being in the game. So limited stuff in Tolkien itself. What about in...
Well, there's one other thing I'd like to say, well, maybe James got another thing, but about in Tolkien, because one of the questions I had was, when was Dale founded?
Yes.
And there's two things in the lore that Tolkien, or around Tolkien, which are slightly conflicting, because there's a passage about how at one point, I think in The Hobbits, they talk about Thorin saying that when during the reign of his grandfather, Thror, Merry Town of Dale was founded during that time. And so that's around 2590. And that's that sort of claims about Dale's foundation. However, in the Unfinished Tales of Numenor and Middle-earth, there's a section titled Cirion and Errol, and that's the whole story about Errol coming south and the formation of Rohan. And there's a comment in that after the defeat of another king of Gondor, it doesn't matter, in 1856 of the Third Age, and it says, as the Northmen, a few, it said, fled over the Helduin, the river running, and were merged with the folk of Dale under Erebor, with whom they were kin. And talks about that. So that's much earlier. So whether there was a Dale before, and it went away and then it came back, I don't know, James has got theories here, but there's a bit of conflict there. I think it kind of makes sense to me that maybe it was there because Dale was previously, Erebor, the Lonely Mountain, we know from the lore, had been inhabited by dwarves a long time ago. And then they left and they were in Moria. And then after Moria fell, the story is that they went back there. So I guess maybe there was more than one Dale, as there was more than one occupation of Erebor. That would kind of square those two things, reflecting maybe it was just a mistake, though.
Or maybe one of them is the dwarf version of events, which is not necessarily the version of the story. Would be my suggestion. I do have a couple more things, sorry Josh, that I want to
apologize. This is why we're here.
Touch on, because we've talked about The Hobbit, but we haven't talked about Lord of the Rings. And Dale is mentioned in Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
It is specifically mentioned, at least in the main text, in the first chapter, The Long Expected Party. So if I may read. Actually, in Hobbiton and Bywater, every day in the year was somebody's birthday, so that every hobbit in those parts had a fair chance of at least one present at least once a week. But they never got tired of them. On this occasion, the presents were unusually good. The hobbit children were so excited that for a while they almost forgot about eating. There were toys, the like of which they had never seen before, all beautiful, and some obviously magical. Many of them had indeed been ordered a year before, and had come all the way from the mountain and from Dale, and were of real dwarf make.
Mm.
So in response to some of the things we've been talking about in terms of the relationship between Dale and the dwarves, there is this sense of the intermingling of cultures and practices between the men of Dale and the dwarves, I feel like, that creates this rich culture. And the thing that makes Dale different from Lake Town, I would suggest, is that Lake Town is a merchant hub. People are passing through, people are coming in, trading, leaving, going elsewhere. Yes, there are obviously people who live in Lake Town, but it is a thoroughfare.
Yes.
Dale is a place where two cultures live side by side and work together and exchange traditions and craftsmanship. And that, I think, is really interesting and quite unique in the world of Middle-earth.
Mm. It's almost akin to Eregion and Khazad-dûm.
It's almost like an echo of that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing I want to say about the toy thing is that in the John Garth book, The Worlds of J.R.R. Tolkien, he suggests that. Hang on, give me a moment. In its industrious exuberance, the merry town of Dale is a close match for giddy old Brum, that is to say, Birmingham, which is, of course, the city in the outskirts of which Tolkien spent most of his childhood growing up. So, as Burns points out, Dale's most telling connection with Brum is it characteristically linguistic, the word toy. In Birmingham, famously dubbed the toy shop of Europe, toys meant the whole panoply of small metal goods manufactured there. So the idea of, the toy makers of the world, so to speak, is something that is very grounded in Tolkien's own life, and something that despite his obviously mixed feelings, it's probably too mild, towards the industrialization of Birmingham during his lifetime, that was something he looked on perhaps with some fondness, as he often did towards things that were of craft.
Yeah,
it's the conflict. There is a conflict in Tolkien continually in his work between the ways that craft expresses, the creative aspects of people, and how that can, of course, then be turned towards negative consequences. With Sauron, with Saruman, and so on.
Yeah.
So there's always this conflict, but Dale is the counterbalance to those images of grim industrialization that we get with Mordor, with Isengard, and of course with the Scourging of the Shire. So I think Dale plays an important, purpose. Not purpose exactly. It has a role to play as a counterbalance to that.
Hmm. I've never thought of it like that. Thanks.
That leads us into the RPG books and what's available to lore masters and players. So what have we got? What about in Adventures of Middle-earth?
Yeah. So there's quite a few different sources that I think you can draw on for inspiration ideas for gaming. So obviously with the new Lord of the Rings RPG by Free League, we don't yet have anything for this area, but the old Cubicle 7 one, we've got a couple of books. So we've got the Lonely Mountain Region Guide, and that lays out in quite a lot of detail some history of Dale and suggested combat scenery, some rules around that, some locations, some NPCs, etc. And we'll dig into that a bit more in a second. And then it's worth touching on, there's a book called Erebor Adventures, and that has a series, a sort of linked mini campaign of six adventures. And they're all sort of around about Dale. It's not featured heavily. And the second one, there's quite a lot of description of the toy market, and that plays a major role in the plot. So now we have a group haven't done those, and I don't want to give people spoilers, but I'd say that there actually is quite a lot of really useful information, and I did delve into that to get some inspiration. For example, one of the pubs or inns, I guess, that's in Lake Town was in that book, and some of the villains and stat blocks and stuff I drew from that, and there's still some stuff in there that I would like to draw from in a potential future Grey Mountains campaign. And then the third book, so Lonely Mountain Region Guide, Erebor Adventures, and the third one isn't an official adventure book, and it actually is something that I quite often find things and then forget I found them, and then I find them again in my own files. If you Google a guide to Dale for the One Ring RPG, you will find what I would say is a really useful counterpoint to those other books, which is called A Guide to Dale and Surrounding Lands by Richard Harrison for the One Ring role playing game. And what it is a pretty comprehensive book which lays out the history of Dale, surrounding lands, personalities, but also gives you some really detailed information like the towns of the Dalelands and their population, or the army structure and the number of men and or people in the army of Dale, and it goes into a lot of depth actually. So maybe I think it's different. It's not as quite as honed, I guess, as a professional book. And there's probably some information in there that I didn't really need, but it gives you a lot of ideas and kind of maybe fleshes out some of that information that players might ask you. And then you're like, well, I don't know. Like, how many people do live in Dale? I don't know. Why are you asking me that?
Calum, how many people live in Dale?
You had to see that coming.
Well, about 11,250 people about the lands, 3,000 people in Dale, 1,000 people in Escaroth, and other places.
Hmm. So we're thinking of
me, but it seems about right.
Thinking of Dale as the city, very much a walled city, you know, between two of the arms of the mountain, but also the lands about it, and Dale being not quite a capital city really, because it's a city state, but it's the central settlement, and then there'd be other towns nearby. Is that how we're envisaging it?
Yeah, I guess it starts as like a founding city. And then I think there's, so obviously, you know, from what we know in Tolkien lore, the next sort of mention is in, I think, the appendices to Lord of the Rings, and it mentions the war in the north, which is, you know, what was happening Dale and Erebor around the time of the Lord of the Rings events. And there's talk of a great army was sent north to attack that lands, and that there was a great battle fought at the gates of Dale and Erebor, and the people retreated back into Erebor. And at that time, the various kings of both kingdoms were killed, and then their sons sort of carried the day and fought back. And that in the Games Workshop's Middle-earth strategy battle game, they've released a supplement book called War of the North, which it's got quite a lot of interesting stuff, but I don't know, there's not that much lore in it, I guess.
Yeah, the only things that I think we really know are from Appendix B of Lord of the Rings, which gives the account of, you know, everything, you know, in short notes.
Yeah.
And it is basically what Callum said is basically as much as we know.
Yeah, you can remember it pretty easily. I guess to come back to your point, Josh, so and I think the idea is that Dale kind of flourishes into this more of a kingdom and takes over mm-hmm. more land, and they sort of reclaim the land to get farm. Because I guess the relationship between dwarves and men really provide the food, is one of the sort of key parts of that relationship. So quite an agricultural society to
and reach things on high shelves.
And reach things on high shelves. Yeah. So, and then I guess coming back, so it's, you know, a capital city. There's so much freedom here, which is an opportunity. Although I think that's slightly difficult. I don't know. I found it easier in other parts of Middle-earth when it's maybe a bit more set. Because we've talked about this before in many episodes of the podcast about the various sort of ups and downs of doing role-playing games in Middle-earth. I find sometimes having a bit of structure about what's going to happen, and so I have to imagine less, is helpful.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Well, we've run a couple of episodes talking about how you would prepare a city and the kind of the key things you need to know. And as part of that, we talked about working with players and characters who are from or know the city to flesh it out with NPCs, which is partly why we have James with us today, because I know that's something that you two did as player and lore master, isn't it?
Yes, it wasn't really something we planned out or mapped out in like a structured way. It was like things came up over time, and I sort of might message Callum and be like, what do you think about this? Or Callum's like, do you have anything that you want to sort of lay out about that? So it was a conversation. But I think the early idea that appealed to me, unsurprisingly, was this sort of sense of the collaboration between dwarves and humans. And so my idea was that my character Torvald would have done an apprenticeship with a dwarf in the course of the process of rebuilding Dale. And so that was my first character that I just sort of quickly was like, well, that would be a guy. And he's played a small but key role in the campaign, Hepti the Stonemason.
Yes. Yeah, I remember his name. I quite enjoyed role-playing him as a sort of mentor and someone that had known Torvald and used that to play off some of the backstory and how you developed as a character, you know, using that as a, using these characters that your players come up with as the campaign goes on as a way to say to people, like, look how much you've changed as a character or like developed or what you've done differently.
Yes. No, that was very cool. And also he was responsible for Torvald's sword being made. You remember that? You don't remember that?
I remember that.
It's funny that Josh doesn't remember it because Hamlet also doesn't remember it. Or at least not all of it.
No, I don't. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, it is now coming back to me. Yes.
There you go.
Yeah. It is coming back to me.
Yeah. So there's some people got very drunk and then ended up, I think there's a bet or something involved and money gets changed hands and a sword was made. So, you know, I guess inventing characters to go into it, the books have some characters. So I guess, you know, we've even talked about city. We talk about like the key places that you want to prep and have available for people, having the key NPCs and then sort of guiding your players towards that. And I think, as James alludes to there, the rebuilding of Dale and the conjunction with the dwarves and then the commercial hub and toys, those are three like big themes that you can play off when you're running games in Dale. So what's going to be going on? Well, there's going to be a lot of new people coming. There's new traffic, there's immigration, there's exchange of cultures. So that comes with its own challenges. You know, there's going to be conflict potentially, there's going to be a mixing pot, and then the trade and toy making. So maybe there's adventures relating to that. So in the Erebor Adventures, one of the adventures is to do with a toy maker. And I think that's a really interesting way when you base your game and stories and themes in Tolkien. I think that is a really effective way to immerse players in the world because you immediately connect with them. Because if you're like, we're in Dale and the theme is to do with toy making and, you know, potentially you involve children in that way, or maybe the dwarves and relationships with craftsmanship, and that I think is like immediately a hook that people will be invested in, and also make, as you invent new bits, because you will need to invent bits in Dale, people will be willing to do that as long as you've sort of grounded it in Tolkien lore. At least that's my approach. I think that's why we maybe started the episode with the Tolkien lore, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I think people, even just when we were talking about Dale and Birmingham and Tolkien's view of industrialization of things, I think people who play the games predominantly are Tolkien fans and have a sense of Tolkien's work and, let's say, philosophy, that's not quite the right word, but ethos. Even if people don't know enough about Dale, they will be able to immerse themselves in the flavor and the character of it. And I think you're right.
I just had a thought, which is, this is not something we've really done in Dale, but it is something we've done elsewhere, which is, what is kind of exciting about Dale, like we were saying earlier, is the newness and the fact that Bard is trying to establish a kingdom. He is state building that can raise all kinds of interesting situations and conflicts around sort of the consolidation of power, the relationships with regional other groups like the Mirkwood Elves, as well as the Dwarves, obviously. And we haven't in our game necessarily pursued that specifically because our interest was always more in the Anduin Vale. But I think there's a lot of opportunity, just as we did with Stonyford, the small town the hamlet really that we sort of turned into our main base. There is, I think, an opportunity, there is space with Dale, and sort of take some of the pressure off the game master, perhaps, as well, for the players to play roles in building up the city. It's still very young, it's still very new. You can make players participate and get creative, I think, in contributing to it. The only real example of that we have is that I just decided that there was a library. Because for some reason, in my head, you know, because obviously the Cubicle 7 Adventure of the Middle-Earth Player's Guide in the scholar section is like, think about where your scholar kind of learned their scholarship from. And I don't know why, but I just decided that Torvald was an autodidact, at least a bit. But if he's not a didact, he must have taught himself with something. There must be something. And from thence did the Royal Library of Dale spring, which also gave rise to my personal favorite background character, who is the Royal Librarian, Lomond.
Yes.
Littlemond. I may have mentioned this in a previous episode when I've guested on, but I like casting my characters with film actors. And I just told Callum Ben Mendelsohn. And Callum was like, I get it. I get exactly who this person is.
And it's really a creative way to do character creation, actually, because you can immediately have like a bit of a basis for what you're doing with them.
It's less about physical appearance for me than it is about like what is the vibe. So that immediately gave you context for like what is the character's energy, and also like defined, just as like Hepty was more of a mentor figure who's quite in his own way quite fatherly to Torvald, with Lomond it was very much like the slightly put upon boss who has to manage this over enthusiastic employee, and that was a very fun dynamic. And look, he's not played a particularly important role in the story, but I feel like he's contributed a lot of color.
Which is interesting, because I guess we're talking a lot about like, you know, objective stuff, but like subjectively, I get the sense that when we went to Dale, it felt like your character was connected to the place, which I guess was the intention of doing all this. And maybe Josh, is that the sense that you got? Like, how did you feel when we were in Dale? What were the sort of feelings that you got as a player in that space?
That's exactly the feeling we had, and it was exciting that as Torvald, James was able to kind of tee us up before the party got to Dale about what we could expect and who we would speak to and what we would do. I think also because at the time I was playing Halmir, who was from Gondor, all of this was new to him. It was a good juxtaposition with Torvald, who was going home. And so for Halmir, it was brand new, in the sense that it was actually brand new for us as players, because we'd not interacted with any of these NPCs. It was nice to be able to look to one of the other characters as the local guide who knows everything. And it felt like this was, you know, peeling away layers of Torvald's backstory just by being in Dale and, you know, small interactions that he had.
It's almost like Torvald started out as a local man and became a local hero.
Are you going to play the
maybe I'm going to play the music again. Although I think I released an episode where I said we were going to play and we didn't, so massive apologies.
Is that now the bit that you say you're going to play and you don't?
Have you seen Kunk on Earth? Because I think it's from Kunk on Earth or Kunk on Earth. Yes. And then just inexplicably each episode they've chosen a song for each series to play, and one of them is Pump Up the Jam, and I love it.
If anyone who's listening hasn't seen Kunk on Earth, I would recommend watching it. There's no way of explaining what it is, I don't think. I don't think there's any way of articulating what it is.
It's the comedy you'll ever see, I think. So, yeah, I guess trying to establish that feel. And I guess another recommendation I would give. So, obviously, like, we have this wonderful book from Cubicle 7. And hopefully we'll get a new version at some point. But The Lonely Mountain Reading Guide, and, like, there's a lot in there. There's a lot of characters, a lot of places. And we're not going to talk you through that, because I guess you'll just need to try and find or steal or borrow a copy of the book from someone somehow. Or you can go for this version that we recommended online. So there is a lot of stuff that you can do, which is pretty well fleshed out. There's like a healing house, there's courtiers, there's noble, there's barracks. They've come up with these institutions like archeries and important parts of royal archery, trading areas, you know, dwarving areas. There's a bar called the Missing Scale, and I think there's another one as well which you guys went to, which I found quite helpful to like base. I feel like pubs and inns are really, really useful places to put in. So there's all that. It can be, and we talked about in Prepping City, it can be a bit overwhelming feeling that there's this much to prep And so focusing on the key areas you're interested in. But the other thing I was going to say was that, and I think I maybe mentioned this before, was if you've got a player character from the area, sometimes you might view that as a challenge. So when we were going to Dale, I was a bit nervous about running that because I was like, well, there's all this expectation around it. I really want it to be fun. But I also know that like James's character will know stuff. And so it won't be unreasonable for him to be like, oh, there would be this or there's that, or who do I know who does this? So instead of taking that weight on as the game master or lore master when you're doing it, delegate it. Like actually collaborate in that story building and do like co-creation of the world. So that like James was really helpful in giving me these NPCs. And that was so much more meaningful than someone in a book, you know, could have been. But the other thing I did was for each character and player, I gave them like the lore for that area. So I think, James, I gave you like a known lore of Dale where I basically redacted areas of the book I didn't want you to know about.
Yes, you did.
Send it to you. And that was really easy. I think I just screenshotted it and put in a Word document. Did you find that interesting, James? I don't know how you...
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. And I wanted to say when, you know, you and Josh were talking about, you know, how this felt for you in terms of it coming across as somewhere that Torvald was at home in, was that actually it did very much feel that way to me. There was a sense of return and a sense of kind of, what's the word? I don't know what word I'm looking for, but being in, you know, your home territory, being your hometown, right? That hometown feeling. I definitely have that when I'm playing as Torvald in Dale. It definitely brings a different, I think, energy as well. And also it's something that then when there are stakes in the game involving Dale, it, you know, Torvald responds to that in a different way because I have that greater sense of investment.
So I guess that's sort of, we've not really gone into depth. I don't really want to read through the book because there is a lot. There's a really nice map.
We haven't talked about the most important character in Dale.
I actually know who you're going to talk about. And he is in a pre-written module.
See, I have two characters I wanted to talk about. And I think for different reasons, they're the most important character. James, why don't you go first? So,
the character I was thinking of was Clovis Longfoot, the Hobbit cheesemonger.
He was one of my two.
Clovis, a hobbit. A hobbit with a large nose, dark hair, and a full head of graying curls is sharing some of his bread and cheese with a group of travelers, all the while speaking about troubles on the road recently. His name is Clovis.
Indeed. And he is at the center of a vast criminal conspiracy.
I think you shouldn't slander honest hobbits on a podcast such as this because word might get out.
He's up to something.
Yeah, copyright infringement and defamation in the same episode feels like a lot. So let's cut back on that.
But I love them. I love food. I feel like I like describing food and drink when you go into a pub or something because I think you can get quite a lot. Like people can relate to food. And I think you can actually get a feel of a place. And so whenever there's an opportunity to bring up like foods related to the world. So recently we had an adventure where there was just, you were at Bjorn's and it just happened that there was a cheese there. And then I allowed someone to make a check and the dwarven character Runin was able to notice that it was a different type of dwarvish cheese. And then I used that as a way to build lore about them going to the Grey Mountains. And so coming back to the cheese merchant Clovis, I really like that sort of detail in the things. It's like, okay, well, we know there's cheese. So they talk about it in The Hobbit. You know, is it Bumbor can eat a whole wheel of cheese or something in one sitting? Is that come up or is that a film thing? I'm not sure. But so food, sidebar.
Yes. I think it's really well, nice. George R. Marston would approve.
Who was the other character?
Well, I felt we needed to talk about King Bard. Not as significant a character as Clovis, granted, but Bard, because One of the big things that we did when we visited Dale, and also which players are likely to do, is an audience or council with Bard, because he is effectively the patron and he is the leader of the town. So we had quite a few sessions linked to role-playing with Bard, and in quite a, I was going to say standoff, that's not the right way, a relationship where we needed things from him, and he was in a position of power, and there was negotiation and quests involved. So I wondered if perhaps we could talk a bit about Bard as an audience or a council, and both as a lore master and a player, how we dealt with that.
Yeah, so James has already talked about some of the backstory and what's in the known land. And I guess, you know, you immediately conjure up a picture of Bard, whether that's from the film or just from reading the books, as someone who, you know, he's not really been a noble. He's worked hard. He's in a way a man of the people. And he is a military man. He's capable. And so, and also he's got quite a lot of weight on his shoulders now. He's responsible for our people. He's about rebuilding. So he's got a lot of responsibility. And so I think you already kind of start to picture up, this person who is probably less noble removed, quite maybe action orientated was my interpretation of all that, who perhaps doesn't go in for the sort of as much of the traditions and nobility style, and maybe is more straightforward. So in the book, they've got some motivations for him. So his motivation is, I have great ambitions for Dale to make a kingdom in the north that all may see as a shining example of the free people's best qualities. One of his, I won't go into too much detail about the expectations, but essentially he likes it if people bring him important news, and he doesn't like it if you give basically undue courtesy, or, you know, he's quite business focused or spurious allegations. He wants hard facts. He's not one for plotting and scheming and politicking.
The word that Tolkien uses is grim.
Mm.
He's a grim man. I don't think that means he's depressing or depressed, but rather that he's a fundamentally serious person.
Yeah.
Who is aware of the consequences of things, who is aware of the dangers of the world. He's, you know, the one who, not only is the one who slays Smaug, he's the one who notices that Smaug is coming. He's kind of got that sense of what is happening that actually matters right now.
Mm. Yeah, and I guess that probably makes him a very effective leader and ruler. And I guess considering that in a role-playing sense, you know, one of the things I tried to instill was when you arrived in Dale, wasn't immediately, and I'm trying to do this with important characters as well, it's not immediately like you arrive and then you meet Dale. You know, there's deputies. Oh, sorry. I didn't slip. You don't immediately meet Bard. You know, there's some deputies. In this case, there's Elstand, Captain the Guard.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's someone else. There's a in between, or there's a noble or someone. You know, Bard is a busy man. He's not going to deal with level one adventurers. But as you get a name for yourself, you then, you know, become important, and then you're involved with that. And then we had, as Josh said, a whole session. I don't know how did that feel, that sort of session with Bard? I don't know if I did it land the build up to it.
You did, definitely. It was one of my favorite periods in our whole campaign, I think, was. Ah. So for context, Halmir, who was new to the city and new to the North altogether, needed some information from, he thought, from
inside information.
From inside information on making his own way through Tolkien's world. He needed it, and he thought Bard had it, about the location of his uncle, who he knew had been into the Lonely Mountain. So Halmir had certain bits of information. He didn't really know the bit that joined up to how he got into Lake Town. How he got into, that's on my mind always, into the Lonely Mountain, and thought that, of all people, Bard would have it. So he had quite a clear objective, was to learn more about his uncle. That felt like quite a pressured thing to do then, because, you know, he is the leader, the king. You're probably only going to get one shot to talk to him, to try and convince him to give you this information. I remember we had a big, there was a feast, and then we went out hunting with Bard and his son into the Eaves of Mirkwood, and then had quite a cool encounter with the elves as well. And what I liked and what I found memorable was that we encountered the people of Dale, the elves, and the dwarves all very close together. They all felt very different cultures, but that were connected for different reasons. And I certainly felt like it felt like there was a whole plot going on, even though we weren't there. Does that make sense? The world felt like it was interacting regardless of our involvement, which felt very real. So I really enjoyed that session. I remember we went hunting with Bard.
Yes.
And I think Halmir, he was really trying to convince Bard to win him over. And there was a moment where his son was going to shoot a deer. And Halmir actually used one of his abilities to help his son, which was the thing that kind of helped him bond with Bard, and it felt like a real earned moment. So I thought that was a great session.
That's such a great, you got an ability that means that you can turn a miss into a hit.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was that Halmir had basically helped his son with his archery, which Bard had recognized as being a good thing to do, an honorable thing to do, and then he'd been more open.
I kind of forgotten about that whole section. And I guess talking about what you said there, which was the world felt like things were going on, I think that's so important in this sort of world building aspect. It's less about like knowing all the details and all the facts, like the population and the army size. Like that's cool, but I don't think that is necessary to how. I think the key thing is how you make your players feel.
What is the size of Dale's army, Callum?
Well, I'm glad you asked. It doesn't matter. So, if you want to, you can look it up on that guide online.
Sure.
And maybe it does matter to your game. In this context, it doesn't, though, because it's all about how you make them feel. And I think that's what the aim and Lord of the Rings RPG books do well, is give you the tools that you need as a lore master to manipulate, or I guess affect how your players feel in the game by putting in little details about like the environment, the weather, the cultures, and then rumors about interactions. So I think like part of it was like there's maybe some tension between the elves and the men and the dwarfs. At times there's obviously a lot of cooperation, but you know, that might be something that you can play on. And so yeah, that feeling is really important, I think, or at least that's what I've learned. One thing maybe we could finish up on would be, I think it'd be useful to try and give some people, or we could just talk some ideas. If you were going to run some games, whether that's a one shot or a campaign or whatnot, based around Dale, what would we do?
So I have a view on a one-shot and also a view on a game around Dale. So I'm going to start with a one-shot. I think if it's the only time you're going to spend in Dale, you want to get like peak Dale. So you want to kind of get all of the key flavor things in all just in one session, even if it's a bit kind of shoehorned in. So I think you're right. The toy making is key. Relationship with the dwarves is key. And the idea of the city being built is key. So if it's a one shot, I think you would need a toy shop. There'd need to be a dwarf character of some kind. And I'm envisaging some kind of skill challenge chase through the city, because it gives the lore master a good chance to basically describe the whole city. Mm. And I think that players at the end of it would feel that they were really immersed in Dale. They'd have seen it. They would have interacted with the key characters and the central tension. So I think I would do some kind of like toy shop heist or rescue or something like that.
A toy shop one shot.
A toy shop one shot. Easily said.
Maybe we'll go to James for your next idea and then we'll come back to Josh.
Well, Callum, you know I love my politicking in the games that I run. And that would be the direction I would take it in, is getting the players involved in the different interest groups in Dale, and placing sort of internal city conflicts in the context of the wider regional conflicts. And when I say conflicts, I don't necessarily mean war, but just who is on top right now, who is leading the way, who is being able to pressure Bard into moving in certain directions as lead. Obviously, Bard has his own agenda, but he has to take into account the agendas of the nobles, of the dwarves, of the elves. So I would definitely want to, if I was to run a campaign in this part of the world, I would definitely go in that direction. And you have a little bit of an idea of what that might be like.
Awesome.
But Josh, you had another thought.
If I was going to do a campaign, and it was going to be a Dale campaign, so not just visiting, Dale would be the hub. And I think the idea would be this: Dale is new and is being built up. In other words, it's incomplete. So the quests and the structure would be about adding to Dale. And I think the way you do it is you'd need to have Dale itself as a place the players knew. They could interact, use some of the locations we've mentioned. And then the quests would all need to be quite sandboxy. So I don't think it'd be very linear. I think it would be up to the players to pick which particular problem Dale was facing that they were going to deal with. Go out into the surrounding areas. And what you would be doing over time is perhaps they'd be finding new NPCs who might come back to Dale with them to set up a new shop, or to help complete a particular part of the building, or to restock the library or something. And as you go, the players make Dale, much like we did with Stonyford, their own city. So it's not that the lore master creates it all and says, this is Dale. It's more, okay, we've got a starting point. Let's create Dale together by you doing the quests. And I think that's how I'd run a campaign if it was focused in Dale.
I love that idea. And it's just prompted some other ideas in my head. Take that to the extreme and let's have a campaign where you build Dale up from nothing. And you take it and you maybe like use the air rules or in the Lord of the Rings RPG, or you know, you have different characters for the campaign and you take Dale all the way to Lord of the Rings when it's attacked. And so
that'd be so cool.
Epic campaign where you're building Dale as a group. I've just got this book called Microscope, which is a really old RPG, not really old actually, quite old, which is all about building up a world together. And that sort of collaborative storyboarding. And then at the end, it's like, okay, right, here's this thing that you built and you love. I'm going to try and burn it down. And your players are going to be so invested. And you can have a big battle at the end. Maybe you don't need to do it like that, but that's just a building on Josh's idea there.
Love it.
I absolutely love it as well. And if only we had all the time in the world so that we could run all these campaigns.
Well, I think what have we talked about? So we've talked about Dale, the history of the name, which James has illuminated for us. We've talked about what's known in what Tolkien wrote. We have talked about, touched on the sort of books and resources available to run games in Dale. Some of the top tips, I guess, for doing that from our experience. And then finally, some ideas for some adventures based around Dale.
I have a final thought from my side of things.
This is the final thought.
Okay, now, for some reason, when I said it was fine, but when you said it, suddenly there's all this pressure.
There's no pressure, James. None at all.
What I just think is interesting, again, returning to the linguistic side of things, is that a lot of the names that we think of as iconic Tolkien Middle-earth names, names of the dwarfs, for example, Thorin and Balin, and I'm not going to read them all out, but you get the idea, are Norse names, not because those are the dwarves' actual names, but because those are the names that the bardings call them, or the men of Lake Town, the men of Dale call them. So we think that those as dwarven names, but they're not dwarven names. They're Dalish names. And that includes Gandalf.
Yeah.
They don't have the biggest role in the whole legendarium, but they are obviously a space in which Tolkien gets to sort of put some of his, you know, special interests.
Yeah.
One of the things that I find helps me ground Lord of the Rings stuff when I'm running it is kind of relating it to cultures in the real world. And I guess like I always feel like the Rohirrim are sort of like Vikings on horseback, almost like that sort of idea, which then lends itself to the thought, well, if they've come from the north and are kind of loosely related to the men of Dale, maybe there's a Norse theme there. Because I think when I was running the game, I always thought them as, like, I guess, sort of English culture. But that doesn't really make sense now. And I could feel like that's more like maybe Bree. And I never really was able to square, like, what the Gondorians were. Maybe they're sort of like Byzantine sort of empire.
Yeah, I've always kind of had that.
Roman Empire. I think I've heard that analogy on different places. So,
well, certainly from me, because I've definitely said that before.
Oh, okay. Well.
But I'm sure I read it somewhere. So.
Yeah. Cool. Well, go forth and delve into Dale, I guess.
Be the Dale you want to see in the world.
No emails except on party business. And comments, suggestions, and questions to thefellowshipphase@gmail.com. The long year turns to its close. Much we have accomplished these last seasons. Our fellowship disbands, but is not broken, and we will return.
On the next episode of The Fellowship Phase.